It's Wednesday, July 15th, 2026. This is Susan at the Talking Information Center, and I am reading the Plymouth Independent. Thanks to a lost friend and journalist by Mary Lesueur. In her 93 years, Bobby Clark filled an enormous treasure chest of unique, remarkable, some invaluable achievements and memories. Such a rich book of life. While most significantly as a wife, mother, and grandmother, Bobby was also a very accomplished woman. Her 5 Emmys in Chicago broadcasting only speak to earlier decades. How fortunate Harvey and I were to have met and developed our longtime friendship with Bobby early in her move to Plymouth. Our friendship often gave us front row seats as we watched her many contributions to Plymouth and the growing, well-earned respect from our community leaders. In her daily role in WATD's newsroom, town officials became more accountable and local citizens more knowledgeable. Her leadership on the Plymouth Center Steering Committee and the Library Board contributed to wiser decision-making as well, and her membership in the local League of Women Voters was an ongoing asset to that organization, too. Bobby's varied contributions for the Beyond Plymouth Rock Hometown in the 20th Century project were yeoman, since the project included 2 written volumes and a theatrical presentation. Bobby was involved in all aspects, interviews, essays, and theater. When some local leaders set out to explore potential avenues to expand local news coverage, Bobby was enthusiastic and a constructive participant in getting one off the ground. She and I always shared a strong belief that for any local resident, current, up-to-date information about one's community was vital to ensure its vitality. In her final weeks, we often had conversations generated by it, the Plymouth Independent. I always treasured our times together, whether in person, on the phone, or texting. She was way ahead of me in her willingness to learn new technologies for her radio interviews or reports, even in the last 2 decades. Personally, having Bobby's voice stilled has been devastating. I am just so grateful that we were able to share so many years of life's daily happenings, whether serious or light, in need of hand-holding or simply an ear. Friends as well as family can play key roles in lives. Bobby certainly did in mine, and I am so very grateful. Submitted by Mary Lesueur of Lincolnshire, Illinois. Town Honors Outstanding Students Social Justice Record by John Plate. The Plymouth for All Committee, a committee of the Town of Plymouth, presented its 9th annual Outstanding Citizenship Award to 3 Plymouth High School students at the July 7th Select Board meeting. The purpose of this award is to recognize a student who has shown a commitment to social justice by challenging discrimination or bigotry through his or her actions, and or who actively works to celebrate diversity and inclusivity, or to protect the civil rights of all people in our community. A financial gift is included in the award. The first recipient of the 2026 Plymouth for All Outstanding Citizenship Award is Molly St. Gillet, a 2026 graduate of Plymouth North. She was nominated for the award by Michelle Lewison, her Interact Club advisor. Ms. Lewison states, "Over the past 4 years, I have had the privilege of witnessing Molly's leadership, compassion, and tireless dedication to improving the lives of those around her. As president of the Plymouth North Interact Club for the past 2 years, she has demonstrated an unwavering commitment to serving her community. Her leadership is defined not only by initiative, but by a genuine belief that every individual deserves dignity, care, and opportunity. One of Molly's most meaningful contributions has been her role in establishing and maintaining a food pantry at our school. Recognizing that some students face food insecurity due to financial hardship or challenges due to immigration status, she worked with others to create a space where students could access essential resources discreetly and respectfully. Molly's leadership has also been instrumental in the organization and implementation of Plymouth North's annual Be the Light benefit shows. She has contacted local businesses to secure donations and sponsorships, recruited performers, and maintained communications with the nonprofits selected as beneficiaries. Over the past 4 years, these events have raised just under $25,000 for a range of causes, including organizations that support pediatric cancer patients and their families and local veterans. Molly helped to organize a community fall cleanup event focused on assisting senior citizens who do not have family support or financial means to manage seasonal property maintenance. This effort brought together students and community members to provide practical help while fostering meaningful intergenerational connections. Comments from her advisor included, "What distinguishes Molly most is her instinct to recognize injustice or need and to respond with thoughtful, purposeful action. She consistently demonstrates the belief that every person deserves care, respect, and opportunity, and she actively works to address inequities when she encounters them. Rather than waiting for change to happen, Molly helps to create it." The second recipient is Zachary Hogg, a 2026 graduate of Plymouth South. He was nominated for this award by his principal, Patricia Fry, his guidance counselor, Kristen Buchanan, and his psychology teacher and senior class advisor, Allison Shaver. They state that if you were to ask anyone Zach has crossed paths with to explain him in a few words, you would consistently hear things such as admired, inclusive to everyone, helper, positive, and leader. They go on to say that Zach is a perfect example of someone who actively works to celebrate diversity and welcome all. He has been a student ambassador for 2 years, working with students from China who come to Plymouth for a month each year. He goes above and beyond to help them feel welcomed and make sure they are always included in the life of a high school student. Zach not only connects with the student he is paired with, but with all of the students from China, going to the house they rented for dinner, taking them bowling and shopping, and overall just helping them to fully experience American life. His willingness to be a friend to anyone is admired. They provide another example of this involving one of his track teammates who practices a religion with which some are not familiar. On numerous occasions, Zach heard other teammates talking about this individual and his family, giving false information about what happens in and out of their home. Zach quietly stood up for his peer, educating the others about their misbeliefs and stereotypes. It has taken time, but recently a large group went over to the teammate's house for a team dinner. Zach has done all of this out of kindness, showing that we may all have biases that we do not realize, and that it is important to be open and learn more and not judge a book by its cover or believe everything you see on TV or social media. Last but not least, Zach has been a student representative on the Plymouth for All committee for the past 2 years, helping out with our events, bringing a different perspective to our meetings, and keeping us apprised of bias incidents and other issues in the schools. The third recipient is Rebecca Jankowski, a 2026 graduate of the Rising Tide Charter Public School. She was nominated for the award by Dr. Joseph Fisher, her counselor and teacher. He tells us, "Rebecca is a significant leader in the Rising Tide community who has demonstrated a deep commitment to serving others through both her words and deeds. Her kindness and charisma make her the rare student that everyone likes and roots for. Rebecca's commitment to community service is most evident in her role as chapter president of the International Order of the Rainbow Girls. Though through this role, she leads a group of peers in planning and delivering service projects for at-need populations. For example, each month, Rebecca's chapter collects non-perishable goods like canned foods and toiletries, turns them into functional care packages, and then donates them to organizations that serve houseless veterans across the South Shore. She also coordinates her chapter's community service days at Gifts to Give, helping to organize and distribute goods like clothes, toys, and games to low-income children and families. At Rising Tide, Rebecca was class representative and secretary of student government. In these roles, she helped lead school-wide community service projects. Working with Savers, for example, she supported a successful donation drive to provide clothing to immigrants and refugees through the New American Association of Massachusetts. Rebecca's service takes a more personalized form in her work with the Inclusive Events Club, a student organization dedicated to creating safe, welcoming spaces for young people with intellectual disabilities. As a founding member and treasurer of Inclusive Events, Rebecca has been a mover and shaker, making weekend events with the Riverview School both possible and successful. The same can be said for her work with the Rotary Club, where she helped introduce the Yellow Tulip Project as a means to raise mental health awareness. Dr. Fisher concludes, her cheerfulness and selflessness are magnetic, and I cannot wait to see the impact she makes on her future communities. The award recipients were also presented with citations from the offices of State Representatives Michelle Badger, Kathy LaNatra, and State Senator Dylan Fernandez. If you wish to help Plymouth for All to fund future outstanding citizenship awards, you may send a check to the Town of Plymouth to the attention of the Treasurer at 26 Court Street, Plymouth, 02360. Make your check payable to the Town of Plymouth and mention the award in the memo section. The awards are funded solely through private donations. For more information about the Plymouth for All Committee, see its website or follow it on Facebook and or Instagram at Plymouth for All. The Addams Family Coming to the Stage by Julia Marie Davis. This week, Americana Theater Company presents The Addams Family, bringing the beloved Broadway musical to the Spire Center for the Performing Arts at 25 and a half Court Street, with a cast of 15 professional actors from both the South Shore and across the country. The production continues the company's tradition of pairing crowd-pleasing entertainment with stories that offer something a little deeper beneath the laughs. For artistic director Derek Martin, choosing this summer's production was an easy decision. "We wanted to have a family-friendly show that was both funny and had heart," Martin said. "In the summertime in Plymouth, people seem to love musicals, comedies, and murder mysteries, or some combination of all three." The Addams Family offers exactly that. While audiences can expect familiar characters, outrageous comedy, and memorable songs, Martin believes the show's enduring appeal lies elsewhere. "It's a celebration of the family unit," he said, "and it is a celebration of being unique, that having unique qualities is a massive strength and adds color to our mundane lives." Those themes may resonate even more strongly today. In a year marked by uncertainty and constant headlines, Martin says he sees the production as a welcome reminder that laughter and acceptance still matter. "I think the show is a blast, and a little fun escapist comedy is always a good answer to difficult times." The cast combines 8 local professional actors with 7 performers from outside the region, including artists from New York City, California, and Virginia. Martin himself steps into the role of Gomez Addams, while longtime Americana favorite Peyton Gobiel plays Morticia. Finley Ryan Gould takes on Wednesday Addams, a role she told Martin has long been one of her dream parts. Guiding the production is director Marianne Savelle, whose experience helps balance the show's broad comedy with genuine emotion. "Many scenes have the cast and crew dying laughing," Martin said. "Other scenes have drawn tears." Producing a Broadway musical inside the intimate Spire Center comes with challenges. Limited backstage space means elaborate scenery gives way to inventive staging and creative storytelling, an approach that Martin believes has become part of Americana's signature style. Since its founding in 2011, the company has grown from a 4-person production staged with work lights and minimal scenery into a year-round professional theater company, presenting multiple productions annually while employing dozens of actors, designers, and technicians. It has also expanded its educational mission through Studio Americana. Martin believes that growth reflects Plymouth's own cultural evolution. The downtown is a thriving community, he said. Professional theater and the arts don't just entertain, they strengthen the community. As for audiences attending the Addams Family, his hopes are simple. I hope they laugh, I hope they hug their loved ones, and I hope they leave lifted and bless others with the joy they've experienced. Shows this week are Thursday the 16th through Saturday the 19th. Tickets and more information can be found at AmericanaTheater.org. Healy's nuclear plan hits snag. Plymouth's old pilgrim site and the deal for surrounding acreage could be affected, by Fred Theis. Governor Maura Healey's push to bring nuclear power plants back to the state was dealt a potentially fatal blow earlier this month when state senators voted overwhelmingly against her idea to take the decision away from voters. On July 1st, the state Senate voted 32-8 to adopt a sweeping energy bill which keeps intact a 44-year-old requirement for a statewide referendum before any new nuclear power plant can be built. Healy has been pushing to jettison the requirement, one many say is an insurmountable obstacle given the electorate's feelings on nuclear, as part of her plan to use smaller nuclear reactors to stem rising energy costs. The House voted overwhelmingly in favor of the governor's plan in February. The two divergent versions, small pieces of a sweeping energy package designed to make power more accessible and less expensive, are now headed for a negotiation in a joint conference committee. It just didn't make sense to repeal this ballot initiative, said Senator Julian Sear of the Cape and Islands, who was one of the leaders of the move to keep the statewide referendum adopted by ballot initiative in 1982. Sear argued that even if the referendum was repealed, it would be very unlikely any company would want to develop small nuclear reactors in Massachusetts, given the stringent requirements around building a nuclear facility in the state under public health and safety laws and regulations. He said the Senate is not interested in weakening those requirements. The setback could have an enormous effect on Plymouth, where talks of nuclear power have been a hot-button political issue since before the Pilgrim nuclear power plant in Manomet was decommissioned in 2019. The owner of the decommissioned plant, Holtec International, also owns 1,671 surrounding acres in serious demand by environmentalists, developers, and town officials. Whether or not it becomes a future viable site for a nuclear reactor changes the landscape on those negotiations. Experts say if nuclear power comes back to Massachusetts, Pilgrim location would be a logical and cost-effective location. But during her push last year to bring nuclear energy back to the state, Healy reportedly told a delegation of Plymouth elected officials she was not thinking of the Pilgrim site as a possible future nuclear site. We talked about the concern in the community that she was looking to keep new nuclear in Plymouth, and she said that was not something she was looking to do, said Select Board Member Kevin Canty, who was present at the June 2025 meeting. She was looking to put new nuclear near other areas of the Commonwealth, more populated areas, cities, or urban areas. That's what she said. Canty said Healy did not specify which cities she was considering. State Senator Dylan Fernandez, who was among the 32 who rejected Healy's effort to jettison the referendum, was also among those who listened to Healy's pitch last year. The governor's office has been adamant. This is about small modular reactors, Fernandez said. There are other places in the Commonwealth that have expressed interest in it, and it's perfectly fine with me if those places that have expressed interest in it want to pursue it. Governor Healy declined to provide a statement to The Independent and instead referred a reporter to her Office of Energy and Environmental Affairs. In an emailed statement, a spokesperson for EEA Secretary Rebecca Tepper sidestepped the question about whether Plymouth has been ruled out as a site for a future nuclear plant. The administration has not considered any sites for new nuclear facilities, the spokesperson said. Should there be any interest in siting new nuclear facilities, the administration would be interested in siting models like collaborative siting, which would involve extensive community engagement and prioritizing sites where the community has expressed interest in hosting a facility. The 1982 requirement forcing a statewide referendum on any new nuclear facility was largely in reaction to the 1979 meltdown at Three Mile Island in Pennsylvania. According to the Healey administration, it's time for a reality check as energy consumption and costs continue to increase. We need an all-of-the-above approach to ensure reliability and keep costs down, which is why Governor Healey is working with other New England governors to explore advanced nuclear technologies, said Tepper's spokeswoman in an email. Like small modular reactors and microreactors that require a smaller footprint, produce less waste, and can be factory assembled. At the same time, she has called for a safe and expeditious decommissioning of the Pilgrim Power Plant, held Holtec accountable, and ensured strong community engagement in Plymouth as the site is restored. Holtec has made no secret of its desire to build new nuclear power plants featuring small modular reactors at sites in Michigan, Tennessee, New Jersey, and Utah. The company has said the Michigan reactors could go online as soon as the early 2030s. Holtec spent $87,000 on lobbyists to represent its interests before the Massachusetts legislature last year. What Holtec wants for Plymouth, however, remains unclear. The company still owns about 1,671 acres around the former nuclear plant site, which it predicts would be fully decommissioned by 2035. The high voltage lines that used to connect the plant to the power grid are still in place and owned by Eversource. Patrick O'Brien, Holtec's Government Affairs and Communications Director, said in an email that the move to eliminate the requirement for a statewide referendum to approve any new nuclear plants still has a long way to go. And repeal of the 1982 law alone, O'Brien said, would still leave Massachusetts back in the queue behind many other states that have historically been more welcoming to nuclear power. Repeal is a long way from any project trusting a state to provide the assurance to finance a multi-billion dollar project across multiple administrations to be able to construct, O'Brien said. We'll wait and see what comes from the governor's nuclear roadmap. But the reality is Massachusetts has a multi-decade history of being adverse to nuclear. However, O'Brien acknowledged Pilgrim would be the ideal spot in the state. Based on the historical workforce, infrastructure to connect into the grid, and a community that understands the benefits and risks, it certainly would be at the top of sites for a new plant in Massachusetts, he said. Canty, who is the select board's representative on the state's Nuclear Decommissioning Citizens Advisory Panel, said Holtec has shown no interest in a small modular reactor in Plymouth. I know a lot of people believe Holtec wants to open new nuclear power plant here, but I have not seen any indication that that is the case. And in fact, my conversations with Holtec representatives have essentially been that as of right now, it's a non-starter. Longtime opponents of the Pilgrim nuclear plant argue that the governor and the House are moving towards eliminating the only safeguard the town has against having another nuclear plant. To think that the legislators would remove these basic democratic rights is very serious, said Diane Turco, executive director of the watchdog group Cape Downwinders. Supporters of getting rid of voters' right to veto nuclear plants say the referendum acts as an effective ban on new plants because it discourages companies from considering Massachusetts for nuclear power. In March, all six New England governors committed to preserving existing nuclear assets and exploring new nuclear applications. The two remaining New England nuclear power plants provide 20 to 25% of the region's power needs. New England excuse me, Massachusetts no longer has any nuclear power plants. The existing Pilgrim license only allows Holtec to possess Pilgrim's used fuel while the plant is disassembled and cleaned up, said Scott Burnell, a spokesperson for the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission, who adds Holtec would need to file a new reactor application to build anything else at the site. The valuable property around Pilgrim Holtec is divided into two parts. 144 acres of waterfront property owned by Holtec includes the former power plant itself, as well as spent fuel casks. Another 1,500 acres between Rocky Hill Road and the Pine Hills development is designated as forestry land. Under an agreement with Holtec, in effect until 2031, the town has the first right of refusal should Holtec decide to sell those acres. Of those, about 400 acres between Rocky Hill Road and Route 3A are restricted from sale by the license that Holtec holds from the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission and cannot be sold until the NRC approves, O'Brien said. Canty said he would like the town to buy the 1,500 acres, keeping most of the land in conservation, but with room along Powerhouse Road for what he calls a Woods Hole North area, devoted to scientific research and spin-off businesses, such as the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute in Falmouth. The town has accumulated $11 million in a special fund, likely to fall far short of the market value to buy the land. Last year, after extensive input from residents, the select board accepted a consulting firm's report proposing how Plymouth could use the 1,500 acres in Manomet. Under the proposal, most of the site would be kept as open space with a trail system for hikers and bikers. But Sasaki, the consulting firm, said the town could opt to allow 100 to 200 housing units and up to 190 hotel rooms in the northwestern part of the land near Warren Cove, with an access road to be built from 3A. Sasaki said the town could rezone some of the property to attract innovative industries. But first, the town would have to acquire the land. If the town was also able to buy some of the 144-acre waterfront site, Sasaki offered several options. They included connecting to potential future offshore wind developments, small modular nuclear reactors, utility-scale battery energy storage systems, and rooftop solar to power adjacent light industry or to supply the town with cheaper electricity. Sasaki said the town could negotiate payments in lieu of taxes with Holtec or a subsequent owner of the property. You've been listening to the Plymouth Independent on Wednesday, July 15th, from the Talking Information Center.